Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everyone to Chuck Bonnerville, Julie Hayden, Truth Straight Up on a Wednesday, brought to you by
Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with happytrees.co. And Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Hey, I want to apologize again. Chuck and I are both feeling better, but we're also both sucking on cough drops. Our son, Rev, and his entire school, I think, was out last week and part of this week. Turns out he had croup. We have now laryngitis. But we're going to make it through. A ton of stuff to talk about. We got Trump's speech. Hooray. We've got Scott Powell coming up to talk about what we need to do to win the elections. And then some very interesting developments going on in the Paul Pelosi case. And I want to kind of bring you up to speed on that. And, you know, I was a reporter for a long time and explain what I see going on behind the scenes. But Chuck, while we're waiting.
I think I can guess.
Let's see. Cover up. Can you say cover up? Can you say
dishonest? NBC suspended a reporter for telling the truth.
Exactly. I go back to my original question of that. Would the Department of Justice lie in an affidavit? It's like, I think they might. But we have Scott Powell with us. Scott Powell is an author, a political commentator. He's with Rediscovering America. A ton of stuff to talk about. Hey, Scott, thank you for your time. Welcome back to the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, Scott.
It's a really pleasure to be with you.
I know I want to talk about you had a great column where you talked about what Republicans need to do, adapt or die, as people are saying, to the new election world we live in. But before that, just want to get did you see Trump's speech last night? Just want to get your take on that.
I did. I had to leave before he completed it, so I stayed a few minutes after he announced that he was running for the presidency. I was hoping that there would be something more, but maybe you heard after that. What did he have to say that...
We'll talk about that a bit more.
He's running in 2024.
Yeah, he said he's running in 2024. You know, my take on it, it went too long. I always think speeches go too long. But I think it hit the right tone. It seemed more like he was delivering a State of the Union address, outlining what he'd accomplished, what he hoped to accomplish. And of course, everybody, and now we've got the conservative media attacking him too. Chuck, as you've noted, they've been leading up to that. If he had given a fiery speech, they would have called him, divisive and aggressive, et cetera. And now they're calling him boring. So
he covered the points he wanted to cover, and it wasn't the most exciting speech, but it's really announcing for 2024 that matters.
But Scott, what I want to talk to you about, which you pointed out, and Chuck and I have been saying for years, because we live in Colorado, which was since 2014, basically, has been the model from all of these election changes that have been sort of set in place by Democrats. And speech or no speech, I think the most important thing Republicans need to do before 2024 is get their election mechanisms, their election strategy, their election processes in order.
I fully agree. I mean, there was clearly vote fraud again in this election, and I think that perhaps we'll find out the extent of it in Harris County, Texas, and Arizona, and I don't know if anything's going to happen in Nevada, and maybe some other jurisdictions where there are clearly problems. I think that we're still suffering under the cloud of massive election irregularity, and that undermines the legitimacy of the whole process. And of course, that sometimes discourages people from voting if they think their vote doesn't really count. Why vote?
Right.
But I agree with you. I think we, for instance, in the area of mail-in ballots, what we saw in Arizona was a fairly extensive mail-in ballots well before the election. People were making the decisions who to vote for and mailing them in. So they've voted. It's gone. So put aside the vote counting. The reality is that they didn't hear the they didn't hear the discussion and the debate as you move towards election day that could turn things. And I think debates are really important. And of course, Katie Hobbs, Carrie Lake's opponent, wouldn't debate her. So
right.
But in other states, there were debates, like the Fetterman debate, I think, came fairly close to
right.
Well into the mail-in voting period. And, of course, if people had mailed in their ballots early and voted for Fetterman, they might have changed their minds had they seen the debate, had they really seen what's going on. But so I do think that we need, we need to have, we need to, I think, shorten the period, the mail-in
yeah.
period shouldn't be, I shouldn't think it should be longer than 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But I think then the Republicans have got to, they've got to meet the Democrats head-to-head in terms of
right.
their strategies. And
right.
and where there's ballot harvesting even, where that's still legal, well, if you're not going to change that law, Republicans ought to get out there and do the same thing. They
right.
ought to be visiting nursing homes and collecting votes.
I can tell you, because back in 2002, the Secretary of State of Colorado, Danetta Davidson, sua sponte, declared that no excuse about absentee ballots. And so I ran elections based on that. And by election day, every election I was part of was over, because the opponent would not go out and ballot harvest. It takes an enormous amount of effort. It takes an enormous amount of people. But you will never win against a ballot harvesting operation unless you ballot harvest, for two simple reasons. One, you make sure that all your voters vote. And moreover, you have a month period to find out as A voted. And you'd go up to A and say, his apartments, have you voted? And they say, oh, yeah, I did. I said, no, you haven't. Your ballot's over there, so fill it out and give it to me. and that's how it works. That's how it works. You cannot ever defeat, if it's even close, Democrats and Republicans. If one team ballot harvests, because
right.
ballot harvesting is a way of getting out the vote for almost a month. I mean, so
yeah,
you have
to just
okay,
one
we
day.
Got 50% of the votes in. Now we got to get the other 50% of the votes in. So it's an enormous advantage. Moreover, it changes. Most people you collect a ballot from could care less about the debates or anything else. You just say, this is our candidate, and you know that. So vote for our candidates and give me that ballot and give it to me now. And that's just how it works, literally. Now, that's
yeah.
not including the fraud. The fraud is a whole different one, but it encourages fraud. It encourages you to go to places that ballots have been sent, and you just gather them up and fill them out and send them in with witness things. So we didn't do that. But boy, the temptation was great. And so the Democrats do both. And then the cherry-picked Republicans go on an election day, fools to the slaughter. Fools to the slaughter. One, people get sick, people have kids have problems, they forget it's election day, they've got other concerns, so your turnout is going to be smaller. But you've had one half a day to try to get people who haven't voted to vote, and they all say, well, I'll go in later. You cannot win against a ballot harvesting operation without ballot harvesting. Now, I think
yes.
you've got to, I disagree with you about a week or two, you've got to get same day voting, or you always have.
Oh, I'm all in favor of paper ballots and same-day voting. I would even support creating a new holiday, and it's called Election Day.
Yeah, that'd be fine. But you cannot have one-side ballot harvesting, and it shouldn't be a week. It shouldn't be 2 weeks. It should be one-day voting. And the only way you're going to get that is having your own ballot harvest. There will be ballot harvesting wars. People will be rushing into apartment houses to smack all the people who don't really care. Fetterman, Oz.
Let me ask Scott this though, Scott, because I'm glad to hear people like you. I mean, like I said, Chuck and I have been sort of voices in the wilderness because we live in Colorado, where it's been going on. So you see it, you get it. I'm seeing a lot of this being written about now, finally, nationally. Do you have hope or faith? I don't know which would be the right word. That the Republican Party is going to step up to this in 2024?
I think that they will. I do. Yes, I do. I think that there is a lot of discussion. I was just at a conference with a lot of high-powered Republicans, and there was more discussion than ever about doing things that we never thought of, you know, that we that were below us before. But now we recognize that we've got to you've got to play hardball with another with the other team that's also playing hardball.
Well, right. I hate to say a bunch of high-powered Republicans get together. Doesn't sound like good news.
They're mainly gray hair and silver hairs. High-powered would be that they've got they probably have more money. I don't know that they would be out there engaging in door-to-door ballot harvesting.
Well,
that's a younger demographic, and that is one of one of the disadvantages. That the two party that we have vis-a-vis the Democrats now is that you have this whole young woke generation that they can draw on for their political activism, for getting out the vote and so forth.
That's what they rely on. They rely on the millions of people they pay. The millions of people that are part of teachers' unions, the millions of people part
absolutely.
Of local unions and everything else.
I mean, one of our big challenges is really it's a money game now, and we're outgunned. The Republicans are now cannot raise the money that the Democrats do, and that's money we know about. What about the illicit money? You don't think that the drug cartels in Mexico aren't going to protect their franchise?
Yeah,
by getting money into the Democrat Party in Arizona, you better believe they get money in there. Yes.
That's a good point. Well, and look at
you better believe it. This is it's a billion-dollar business. They're going to protect that business just as a businessman would.
Right, right. Well, and look at Ukraine and the crypto guy. Right. I mean, the heck is that? And then you look at the money that Zuckerberg has poured in. And you're right. But here's what I think. And I was talking about this on our last show. It doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, I think there's some races. You need to target your races. But I was saying, for example, in Colorado CD8, Barb Kirkmeyer lost by about 1,000 votes. So in Colorado, if we could have had, you can legally harvest 10 ballots in Colorado. One person can, right?
You can.
So if we could have had 10 people go to a church, right, and develop the relationship and get people to register and then go back and get their ballots, that's legal. And then they went and then same people went to 10 churches. That's the difference. I mean, I'm sure they could find 10 churches in CD8 that would be happy to help. So I think we don't want to get ourselves.
If you're a Democrat and you have to think like a Democrat, you can collect 10 ballots per what? Per election cycle? Per year? Per day?
Per hour?
Anything else. And the way they'll interpret it is 10 at a time. And so they'll go out
10 at a time. Right. But you can go back and get another 10 and another 10 and another 10, correct?
Exactly.
In Colorado?
Yeah. Yeah. But here's the thing, though. I looked that law up, and actually it's kind of vague. And it also had a weird thing that said
the law is always vague.
Let me just exactly. And then it said, unless you were somebody designated by the clerk or the secretary of state, then you could collect even more. I'm like, well, how does that work? So,
right. Janet Griswold will appoint.
Just like Katie Hobbs was the supervisor of elections in Arizona, and she was on the ballot, right?
Right, right.
Where were the Republicans in making a, an objection to that? I mean, Katie Hobbs should have recused herself when she was a candidate. I mean, I guess, the Secretary of State automatically is the supervisor of elections, right?
Right.
So Katie Hobbs is the Secretary of State. She supervises elections because that's part of the job. But because she was a candidate on the ballot, it's just huge conflict of interest.
Oh, exactly.
And where was the judgment of anybody? I mean, you don't expect her to recuse herself. In previous times that might have happened, but
not anymore.
It's a different world, and that's where we also have a disadvantage. The Democrats have a whole frame a different. They have an advantage over Republicans because they shroud their cause in an ungrounded new morality. Call it woke morality, and it usually involves apocalyptic terms such as saving democracy or saving the planet. And because those things supersede everything else, they'll just break the law. I mean,
right?
Because the cause is the ends justify the means, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And this is is throughout the Democrat Party right now.
Yes.
I mean, that's why we're losing our civilization. Let's transcend this conversation a little bit to the bigger picture, that we're losing our country because we have, you know, half the country no longer believes in moral law, in traditional moral law.
Well, the problem is the Democrats, from its very foundation, have been an evil and corrupt party. Let's just go back to Reconstruction. So the Democrats who lost the Civil War and now have no chance of winning elections. So what do? They disenfranchise every black who was a Republican back in the 1870s, saying none of them can vote. That's okay. And then they go into all the big cities, whether it's Tammany Hall in New York or up in Boston with Curley, or you know, you can go anywhere. And absolute corruption was taking place in the big cities. They won or stayed even because they disenfranchised every black and they cheated in every election in the big cities. They've always been a corrupt party that has bathed itself in self-righteousness. And it's effective because people believe it. Julie used to be a Democrat. Oh, Democrats used to be nice people. They never were nice people. They were Bull Connors. They were Jim Crow. They were corrupt political machines. That's all they are. That's all. And so today, are they any different? No. They're as corrupt and awful as always. Except, you know, some people
have
realized it. Some people have gone, oh, that's how they've always been. Huh. Wow. No, it's not new. It's been, and, you know, when blacks were Republicans, we did nothing about the disfranchisement. And only when they turned to Democrats that all of a sudden, you know, the franchising of black Americans came back. Republicans have always done nothing about corruption, nothing. And because they're tired, they're old, they're weak, they're pathetic. But they've never stopped corruption in the process, which has helped Democrats control at least half the time, even though they represented a much smaller segment of American society. But that's just me.
I agree with you. I do. And it's not a, you know, how do you fix that?
Yeah, good point.
Well,
I mean, maybe as things deteriorate over the next 2 years, things will, you know, you're going to get, the pain becomes so great that people say, you know, we got to vote against this party. You know, we got to vote against the party in power. Of course, now the Republicans control the House, so it's not as clear cut as it was.
Let me ask you this, though, Scott. I mean, one of the things that makes me hopeful is that, you know, for the past up till now, from 2020 to 2022, you questioned anything about the election other than it was the gold standard around the universe. And you were a denier, you were, you know, a domestic terrorist, things like that. But I think people are, I mean, it's more than a week after the election, and we still don't technically know who's control of the House. I mean, there are more than a couple dozen races still out there, including some here in Colorado. And I think people, I'm hopeful that people look at that and they say, well, that's not right. It shouldn't be that. I mean, I'm hoping that the Democrats have become so brazen and so outrageous that you know, where people used to be able to say, no, that's not going on, that now they look at it and at least they say, you know, you got to wonder, why can't they get things counted in Arizona or in Colorado CD3? I don't, what do you think?
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, I think that we should... It should be understood that when you see extended voting, you know there's vote fraud, voting irregularity going on, period.
Yeah.
Maybe 24 hours, in some circumstances it could be longer, 48 hours. But look, a week has passed, right? And they're still counting votes? Where?
Right. Right. Where are they coming from?
They're not counting votes. They're coming up with new votes.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's the thing. And I think you hit that in your column. It's like, that's the votes are in. You know, we could have had a group of sixth graders hand count them by now if we wanted to.
Right.
They've got to wait for the new batches to come in. And that's the obvious question. Where were those on election day?
I like what Rush Limbaugh said about the 2020 election. He said, and I'm quoting him, "The problem is, we know these votes, and they're all found when we're asleep. They find these votes at 2:30 a.m. in the morning. They find these votes at 4 o'clock in the morning. The votes for Biden, and they are as legitimate as the Steele dossier." That's how I look at them. That was Rush Limbaugh.
That's true.
Probably a few months before he passed away.
Oh, wow. Well, let me, Scott, just before, because I know we need to let you go here, any kind of final thoughts? Or because I know in Rediscovering America, one of the things that you talk about is what a great country this is, and that we need
to absolutely. I mean, you know, I say this to everybody. I say, and I particularly speak to the critics of America, the first thing I say to them, okay, so you don't like America. Okay, what alternative country and government can you point to that is superior in terms of providing you freedom and opportunity? What do you prefer over the American system? And most of them don't have an answer.
Right.
We should never mistake the corruption that exists in our institutions from the structures, the constitutional structures that were put in place. It's not that our Constitution needs to be changed. What we need to do is weed out the corruption. We've got to deal with the corruption of our system. And the same is true for the critics of capitalism. Usually they're the critics of capitalism, they see they're critical of crony capitalism, and they think that that's what capitalism is. No, that's a corrupt capitalism.
Yeah.
And I agree. I'm critical of corrupt capitalism. I don't think there should be special deals or preferential treatment. I think that, you know, companies need to compete on an equal playing field on merit and merit alone.
Yep. All right. Well, Scott, listen, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Rediscovering America. Where can people find it and find out more about you?
Well, the book, you know, it's no longer a new release. When it was a new release, it was 8 straight weeks as number one by Amazon, which is really quite an accomplishment. But I really put my heart and soul into writing this book because I wrote it to save the country. I really felt that the critics that were so vocal and dominated the airwaves were tearing our country apart without any countervailing arguments being made to the 1619 Project. So I set about writing that, and truthfully writing, it's all, you know, it's highly sourced and cited with sources. But what I focused on were the key transitional periods of American history, where there were qualities of character of the leaders of those times that are just so remarkable that it can give great hope to the reader that in earlier times we had also insurmountable problems, but we were able to overcome those problems because of the quality of character of the key people in those periods. And, you know, if we can rediscover those qualities in ourselves, I think we can overcome our current difficulties, notwithstanding that our challenges are probably greater than ever before, because the enemy is now within in greater numbers than ever before.
All right. Scott, thank you. Thank you for the words of hope, too. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Right. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Right. Scott Powell there, Rediscovering America. Well, now I want to go ahead and so 1-888-627-6008. If you're listening and you want to call in, 888-627-6008. You can also, we've got a bunch of great comments in the chat going on. And if you're listening on Zoom, feel free to go ahead and either raise your hand or just go ahead and unmute yourself and chime on in. So Trump is running again. I say hallelujah. The other thing I think that's interesting is all of the conservative triumphs caused Decepticons have been revealed, right? You've got all of the Murdoch, Fox, their head story today was DeSantis received standing ovation, right? Then teeny down there, it's like Trump doesn't even ignore his rivals. I mean, what a Washington Examiner said, Trump's a loser. I mean, all of these terrible things, the New York Post, the conservative media empire is lining up against Trump, which we knew, Chuck, you said that's been happening for a while. And I think so they've been revealed. But I think I am glad because talking about the character, you know, that Scott was just talking about there, with all of his flaws, and there are flaws there, I think Trump is the only person right now, I think, who understands and is brave enough and strong enough and, you know, hardened enough, I guess, to stand up and fight the fight that we need him to fight.
Well, he's the only one who actually, in his own way, because he's wealthy on his own right and everything else, that he really is looking out for the American people, even though it's through a narcissistic lens of his own self-aggrandizement. But he's the only one who puts forth proposals that, really are to benefit America, the working class, the average American. I think Mitch McConnell's worried about proposals that will help America. He could care less. I mean, you know, and all the Bushies are coming back out. All the same corrupt corporate America that controlled it under George Bush. And, you know, our friend Peter Boyles hated Jeb Bush, and now he's become Jeb Bush, or at least equivalent of backing them. I mean, they want to get behind. They have to get, we talked about this earlier, they can't get behind a Mike Pence because, you know, no one believes in Mike Pence. They have to find somebody who they can control, but who the grassroots likes and respects. And that's Ron DeSantis.
Right.
And will Ron DeSantis sell us out? Well, of course. I thought, you know, when Hugh, our old friend, he was around, I told him on election night we won, or that party, you know, that Trump will sell us out. I fully expected Trump to sell us out. And there are times when, you know, on illegal immigration, on players, climate accords and everything else, he was close to doing it with the help of his hideous daughter. But in the end, he didn't.
But she's not going to be involved. Hey, I want to interrupt you one second. Hey, guys, I'm going to make a request to the folks who are chatting in the Zoom thing. Everybody's voice is welcome on this show. Okay. And I mean that. Okay. And I hope everybody respects that, and we don't have to agree, but everybody's voice is welcome. And also, if I may, if we could kind of keep it focused, you know, I'd like you to kind of reply to sort of what Chuck and I are talking about and what everybody's talking about, if that's okay too. I know sometimes we guys into great, interesting discussions between everybody, but maybe if we could kind of, focus it on that too, that would be good.
So go ahead. I mean, so.
I'd like to see what people think about Trump running. I mean, to me, he said, you know, I mean, some of the things he's not going to be able to do, he's not going to be able to do term limits, but he said, he thoroughly understands the swamp. He's been victimized by the swamp. And I think he will do everything he can to stand up against it. And I think he is the one person who stands up for us. I want to read, I mean, this is what's interesting. Ken Griffin, who donated $5 million to DeSantis's campaign.
Yeah.
So he is the head of the Citadel hedge fund, right? This is what he told Politico. Well, this is Politico paraphrasing him. He said, Politico said, Ken Griffin, who is a major DeSantis supporter, he wants to blunt the vein of populism that has complicated the Republican Party's relationship with the corporate world. Let me read that again. He wants to blunt the vein of populism that has complicated the Republican Party's relationship with the corporate world. Now, what the heck does that mean? Right? I mean, that's
the
us.
Corporate America is now against the American people.
Exactly. You would think that corporate America is made up of people too. You would think that if you had any doubt that this is what the divide is, this is the corporate world, the Murdochs, the Anschutzes, the Ken Griffins, and all of the big donors are going to be backing them because they do not want to have to deal with the people. That's populism. You'd think that the corporate world's interest would be the same as the people's interest. No, it's not at all. And they got to do everything they can to squash Trump because it is, as he's always said, it's not him that they really hate. It's us. And he is just standing in front of us, I think. Don't you, Chuck?
I absolutely think that. I mean, It's an amazing to watch Mitch McConnell withdraw all the funds that would have guaranteed a majority Republican Senate. But he was happy because he is still the leader of the Republican Party. It doesn't matter the Republican Party is a minority. He's still the head of it. And he managed to destroy it. And you know, the rest of those people, from John Thune to Barrasso, from Wyoming to all the rest of the idiots, you know, they just made him their leader. I think Mitch McConnell has a 7% approval rating in this country. He's a hated figure, and you make him the most prominent legislative one. I mean, it's just incredible. That's who leads a Republican. McCarthy is not a whole lot better, but you can't be worse than McConnell. So, you know, great. And Ronna McDaniel will come back with her, you know, patheticness.
We all know, I think, once again, as we saw with Mitch McConnell, sabotaging Republican senatorial candidates, even those people would rather lose to Biden than have Trump become president, because, again, right, they have to blunt the vein of populism that is threatening the corporate world.
Corporate America, yeah.
The corporate world, exactly. And so that's us.
And it's amazing that Ken Griffin would be willing to say that publicly to places like Politico. I mean, tell you what, you know, he's leaving Chicago to go down to Florida, and he said, "No, why don't you just stop off in Juliet or something? We don't want."
Yeah, really? Yeah. Well, here's what I think too. After seeing all of the headlines about mega donors saying not going to give a dime to Trump, blah blah blah. Before, I didn't think DeSantis would run. I thought that he would bide his time and would maybe wait. And I don't think that's going to happen now. I think these people are terrified of Trump, and they're terrified that he is going to do what he did before, and that is, you know, bring prosperity, safety, and security to middle-class America, because they certainly don't want that. And which I don't understand why either. It's not like they all went broke under Trump, right? And I think it's just more about control than anything else. But I think they're going to say to DeSantis, you have to run. Now, you and I disagree about this a little bit. I think they're going to say to DeSantis, if you don't run, we'll find somebody else who will. So you might as well take our money. But you don't think so?
No, because they need somebody. Who it can't be a Chris Christie. It can't be
Jeb Bush. God,
some of the other female Republicans.
Oh, Nikki Haley.
Yeah. That just isn't going to work. I mean, they can put all the money they want to. They need to find somebody, and it maybe be a new person they could find. It would be the new great shining thing. But they desperately need DeSantis because he's worked out as a great governor of Florida. So he's got huge bona fides among the Republicans. But, you know, the one person I must say, Sundance. I mean, Sundance called out DeSantis early on. And we said, oh, that's ridiculous. That's stupid. That they have no reason to clash. The only reason for them to do is have Trump run this time and him back DeSantis in 4 years. I mean, or 6 years. I mean, it's. But he was right. When all the signs pointed elsewhere, he said, I watched the people he's come out with, his new team of consultants and campaign managers.
And if people want to chime in, go ahead and unmute yourself, or we'll read your comments here too.
Hello?
Hello.
It's Jacob. I don't know how to raise my hand on this thing. So
that's right. So just interrupt. That's it's family here. You can just jump in.
Okay. I just wanted to say one thing. Rand Paul back, I think it was last year when they were pushing through that $5 trillion Build Back Better thing. All he wanted was a little oversight on the money, where it was going. And now with this FTX thing, we find out that even Mitch McConnell's knee deep in that money.
He got $2.5 million of it.
Exactly.
And if I were Rand Paul, I'd get up on that Senate floor and said, we got a problem with Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's it. Okay. Thank you, Jacob.
Have a great day.
You too. Appreciate it. This is from Barney. Hey, go back.
Hey.
Go ahead, Barney.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Barney.
So this is how we do it. We just interrupt, just like the old Clancy family reunion.
Exactly.
Just interrupt and piss all the liberals off. Okay, let's just be clear. Let's be clear, like Jackass Obama says. Trump may be an a-hole. We know that. We know where he got the country. Our country is going to be a freaking shit show by the time 24 comes.
Yeah.
DeSantis will disappoint you guys. I don't know how else to say it. He's going to back down. Yeah, he looks conservative and he's this and he's that. Tell you right now, he's not a big enough a-hole. You need a super a-hole like Trump. And all you have to do is look at Trump. Who hates Trump? Mitch McConnell hates Trump.
Right.
Automatically, Trump gets my vote. Mitch McConnell, we can't stand you, you fat pig, with your saggy little neck. No, and just like you said, $2 million out of that fund that what's-his-name brought up. By the way, I wanted to bring this up the other day. Kevin McCartney, when he was running around the country campaign, he was telling us, oh, yeah, we're going to get these 87,000 agents defunded. You know what? You told us that with Obama. Affordable Care Act. You're a lion's piece of you're just a big old sack of crap is what you are. We don't trust these guys anymore. They're lying through their teeth. Bottom line is, we got to go with Trump. I don't care if you don't like him, and it's going to be a no-brainer. You watch. Let's see what happens after December. Let's see where diesel fuel goes. Hey, you a-holes that voted for poopy pants is policy. Let's see how much you're going to suffer when trucks aren't rolling, no diesel, no food. Let's just watch, and you're going to talk about buses that are electric. What a stupid-ass woman. That has got to be the dumbest woman in America. But that's okay, right? Doesn't look, actually, she looks pretty smart next to poopy pants. But hey, let me ask you this, and this is a very serious question. Do they give him meth or something? Because one minute he's a bubbling idiot, right out of, you know, slaying there in his oatmeal, puking out of his, and then the next minute he sounds like me, all fired up.
He's rumored to be given Adderall, and Adderall will have that effect.
There you go.
And he had to skip the G20 dinner last night that he flew in
because Adderall was
busy
to wear off.
Something like that.
It was kind of nice seeing Gigi Ping, whatever the hell his name is.
Oh, yeah, take out
rip into. Oh God, that was awesome. The only thing that would be better is somebody would punch somebody in the mouth. But bottom line is, anybody out there, don't listen to the. By the way, Paul Ryan, the little turd, is still at Fox. We know who's against us.
Right.
We know who's out there. Look at the people. You got to go with who hates Trump. The liberals hate Trump. And McConnell, the establishment, hates Trump. You got to go with who hates a guy. So that tells us he's our number one guy.
All right.
Thank you, Barney. I think everybody agrees with you. Jim Jackson, I see no one as tough as President Trump. The media will dismember anyone else. Agree. And Dr. Donna, she's agreeing with you, Barney. She said, although she says it a little nicer than you, I have a feeling if DeSantis gets the vote, he's not strong enough to withstand the slaughter the Dems and the rhinos who are behind the move would launch against him. Yep. From Charlene, full court press against Trump is revealing all those who've been compromised. You guys are all on target here. The squeeze is on anyone who comes out in support of Trump. And from Charlene, they didn't want oversight because they knew the laundromat was open. Is this family like Christmas? We can interrupt everyone. Yes, that's how my family operates.
You gotta do Chuck's that right family. Now.
Yeah. All right, hey, Barney, you got to turn your mic off. Okay. Thomas guided. Well, yeah, I think you guys are, everybody's right on. I think whatever you think of Trump, number one, I always like to say to people who like they hate Trump, I'm like, well, what is it you hate about? Did you hate prosperity? Did you hate unprecedented good times in this country? Did you hate any of the stuff he was doing? They're like, well, no, I didn't like his hair. He was mean or something. That's all a psyops. And that's what they're doing again now, too, where they're trying to tell us, oh, he can't win. He can't do this. He can't do that. And you know what I say? And Chuck, what are your thoughts on this? Have a primary, right? I mean, this is America. That's the way it works. If DeSantis wants to run, go for it. You know, and again, we'll have to worry about the ballot harvesting thing. But, I think that Trump has, it's like he said last night, it's not his campaign, it's our campaign. And he's doing it for us. And I think that's what people saw the first time. He kept his promises. I don't know what would happen with DeSantis. I worry about all the people who are backing him, who flat out say they want to blunt the vein of populism because it's hurting corporate America. I mean, that says it all.
No, it's DeSantis has just as much right to run for president as anyone else.
Not Jeb Bush.
But I think he really risks from going a beloved figure to one that people will not be so enthusiastic about. He and Trump will use up the money while the Democrats build their war chest. So I wish, Trump doesn't work well with others.
No.
You really wish he and DeSantis could have sat down and worked out something that Trump could try, and then it would be DeSantis's turn. But that's not the way things seem to work for Republicans.
Well, and I think it's because of the money people, right? The money people understand that they can't afford, just like the Democrats, they can't afford to let Trump take over again, because, you know, because that gave people hope. I go back to, I remember before the 2016 election, you know, we were talking in our radio shows, and I was saying, you know, it makes me sad because under Obama, he told us, we just have to get used to it, right? And I said, it makes me sad because I think for the first time, I don't know that I believe our children will do better than us. Always is in this country, you kind of had the hope that the next generation would do better. Then boom, Trump came along, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, why have we been falling for this Obama BS? It can be better. And that's what Trump said again last night. It doesn't have to be like this, right? And they want us to forget that. They want us to just, you know, own nothing and be happy about it and have bugs for dinner, I think.
You know, that thing about, I think you were quoting that, you know, it goes for more than a day or two, you know, it's a rigged election. For Kerry Lake, that's so true. You just knew sometime last week, that Friday, that they kept on, you know, not counting certain votes, and then they'd bring in other votes, and the whole process seemed to be manipulated.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they know Republicans tend to vote more in person on election day. So when do they have the trouble with the machines? Go figure. In person on election day. There's a shock. You know, how hard is it to manipulate that? So right. I want to switch gears a little bit to talk about the Paul Pelosi thing, because it all kind of ties in together, talking about being lied about. So we all know Paul Pelosi's hit in the head with a hammer by this Brian DePape guy. And all of a sudden, though, the story becomes very weird, and the Department of Justice steps in. And then NBC, so we're going to play you a soundbite here, but a report. Initially, the cops said in their initial arrest, well, I guess the paperwork, I'm not sure if it was a search affidavit, it was an affidavit, though, that someone opened the door and they saw Pelosi there, and then the guy hit him on the head with a hammer, right? Well, then the Department of Justice stepped in, and in their paperwork, they say that the police opened the door, and which, I mean, it was a completely different set of story. So then there was an NBC national reporter who is now missing in action, suspended and missing in action.
Yeah,
who did a report saying, no, it was Paul Pelosi who opened the door, right? Immediately they suspend him. This was all before the midterms. Well, on Friday, a local San Francisco affiliate ran a story that basically affirmed everything. And they did so, and I'll talk about this a little bit just from a reporter's point of view afterwards, the interview that he has with the district attorney. But listen to this and how the story is changing. And you got to ask yourself why. But if we could please play the Paul Pelosi soundbite.
And federal prosecutors each describe one specific detail of the police response differently. Senior investigative reporter Bagat Chaban has been checking with his sources to try and clear it up. He joins us now, and you've got some answers, Bagat.
Well, Jess, this all has to do with the moments, seconds, really, just before Paul Pelosi was struck in the head with a hammer inside his San Francisco home. Now, there continues to be contradicting accounts of a relatively simple question. Who opened the door that night when San Francisco police arrived to the Pelosi house? Now, the Department of Justice says the two officers opened the door. That's according to a federal indictment filed earlier this week. But the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, in another court document that was filed earlier this month, said Mr. Pelosi opened the door with his left hand. So the question is, what really happened? According to a source familiar with the investigation who personally watched the police body camera footage from that night, officers knocked on the door of the Pelosi home, then backed away. And the video clearly shows Paul Pelosi open the door with his left hand, just like what was noted in the documents filed by the DA's office. Now, also as written in the DA docs, the source tells us the body cam video shows officers having a brief conversation with Pelosi and David DePap, that's the man accused of breaking into the Pelosi home, before DePap starts beating Pelosi with a hammer. We reached out to the Department of Justice for an explanation on its differing account of this seemingly innocuous issue of who opened the door, but so far we have not heard back. However, I did get to ask San Francisco DA Brooke Jenkins directly about another issue many people are wondering about earlier this week, based on her office's account of Paul Pelosi opening the door. The case has certainly garnered a fair share of conspiracy theories about what actually happened that night. As part of your investigation, are you able to shed any light as to why Paul Pelosi didn't run out of the house towards police officers when he was able to actually open the door for them when they arrived?
What I'm not able to do is to speculate or try to place my opinions on why someone acted the way they did in any case. All we have is what happened. Everybody reacts to situations differently, and he will one day need to explain, right, to potentially a jury why he did what he did, and what thought process was going on in his mind.
Now, I want to point a couple of things out on that. Number one, so that's the district attorney, right? She is, although the reporter didn't ask her straight out, that was clever reporting work. She is confirming his story. When he said, why didn't he do this when he opened the door? She didn't say, oh no, you misunderstand. That was, you know, the Department of Justice was right. The officers opened the door. No, she was confirming that Paul Pelosi opened the door. She's confirming that having seen the videotape. Why is the Department of Justice lying about that? Number two, she's absolutely right when she says sometimes victims react differently. But then she says, and someday he's going to have to explain that to a jury. Now, Chuck, that's a weird thing. You get involved in trials. That's a weird way to put it, right? That implies, I mean, she would say, you'd think they talked to Paul Pelosi, right? You'd think that he would have said, oh my God, I was just so rattled, or I was scared, or I didn't know what to do. But she doesn't say that. She says, someday he's going to have to explain to a jury, which makes me wonder, well, what is there to explain exactly? Now, granted, he got hit on the head. There's no doubt about that, apparently. But you got to ask yourself, again, if they want us to quit asking questions about what happened in the House, what is it that you think? I mean, at first I thought maybe they just wanted to keep the narrative going for the midterms, and that may be. But no, they seem to be, the San Francisco DA's office and cops are clearly pushing back and pushing back hard against the Department of Justice. I'm not sure, maybe because someday they may have to try the case. But I mean, to me, it's like they're clearly lying. And you got to wonder if it maybe goes back to, well, what would Paul Pelosi's explanation be about why he didn't run for help, right?
Well, it's you know, a seemingly innocuous detail that indicates that there's something much bigger going on. And, you know, no one trusts the Department of Justice these days. No. You assume they're lying for nefarious purposes, and they're not interested in the truth. Neither is NBC. Suspend a honest reporter who got the story right for reporting it right. So what is the bigger one? Why would they go through all of this on seemingly innocuous details? And innocuous details, you know, that could be explained easily, you would
right.
think.
Well, exactly.
So, you know, the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland is absolutely not believable, not credible, not honest. So you assume that the San Francisco Police Department, normally it used to be one day that you'd always believe the Department of Justice over local police authorities. Now it's just the opposite.
Exactly. And, you know, and again, I think that, as Barney is saying, maybe Paul Pelosi knew the guy for some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And I think that certainly does raise that question again. And now, Charlene, you're saying maybe she was spoon-fed that to make it palatable. No, I think that there is a behind-the-scenes kind of, I don't think war is probably too strong, but struggle going on between the San Francisco DA's office and the Department of Justice. You got to bet people were screaming, and you got to bet the NBC affiliate, knowing the pushback that the NBC national reporter got for that story, thought long and hard about going with that story, right? And they had ironclad sources. Well, and again, the DA confirmed it. So I don't think they're trying to make it palatable. I think they're trying to say there's something more here. Now, you know, what that is, we don't know. But I think, Chuck, it goes to your point. The key thing here is the Department of Justice is clearly lying. They could have come out and said, we misunderstood. Now we understand, right? But they're not. They're not commenting at all. And like I said, we know they lied on the FISA warrant, right? When Kleinsmith took out the word not, you know what I mean? Or was a CIA operative and was not a CIA operative, right? Do we think they would lie on? And if they would lie on this kind of affidavit that they know has this kind of scrutiny, you got to wonder, what are they doing in the January 6th? What do we find out there? What, there were some like 8 informants at least in the Proud Boys? I mean, what are there, you know, maybe 10 Proud Boys altogether anyway, right? So 8 of them are, it's just like the Whitmer kidnapping thing. Everybody there, they're more FBI agents than there are conspirators, right?
It's amazing. It's hard to believe anything they say, so you don't anymore. And that's, you know, That's a sad day. That's a sad day when you can't believe anything. You believe nothing in this government, nothing, you know.
No. Well, and that's why I think, going back to kind of wrap it up here, one of the best things I thought Trump said last night is when he becomes president, he will destroy from the top to the bottom the rot inside the corruption, inside
that
the department. No, but at least he gets it, right? At least he's not saying, well, you know, some of them, 99% of the agents are nice guys. You know what I mean? Trump is like, top to bottom, we're going to get rid of the rot. Right. And I think that's a kind of president that we need right now, because when you have, and again, they're not just attacking Trump. We see all these instances where they're going after just regular people who are simply exercising their free speech. Right. And all of a sudden, the next thing you know, they've got the FBI raiding them. So, I don't think DeSantis gets that. And I don't think DeSantis will have the interest in standing up to that. Do you?
No,
at least not yet. At least not yet. So, all right.
All right.
Chuck's kind of, I can see you're getting antsy there. Chuck's kind of put the newspaper out. He's still at the world headquarters. Friday, we're going to try to get Randy Corcoran to speak at an event last night, a great event. Thank you, Rich Wyatt.
Oh, I did just 12 seconds. We went to the Mountain Republican Club and the 285 Tea Party. I think they do it in conjunction up in Evergreen. What a great group. What a great group.
Right. Wow. Well, and you were speaking.
Rich Wyatt and everybody else.
And Randy was going to speak too, but he ended up getting invited to Mar-a-Lago for the speaking. Yeah. So he said he would come and talk on the show Friday. Hopefully we can get him if he's not busy. So that'll be Friday. Hey, everybody, thank you to everybody on
Take
Zoom.
Care,
thank
everybody.
You to all of the comments, the great guys at BBS. And we'll see you on Party Friday.
Bye-bye.